Well, hello, Vashon. This is Dove Speak Show, and my name is Chris Austin, and I have Rashawn Ringling.
Yes, Rashawn Ringling.
Oh, yeah. Welcome.
Thank you.
And she is an advocate for the Dove Project, and we are, our subject today is
elder abuse,
and this is our second show on this topic. We did a one with Betsy Archambault in 2016, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, has it changed? Any new stuff?
Maybe a little bit.
Now, Rashawn, I was looking over some of the information you sent me, and you said you are an advocate for the Dove Project, and you have a background as a social work director for a nursing care facility, and you've helped run a caregiver support group for multi-care behavioral health in Puyallup.
Yeah. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and so I started working as a social work director at Kindred Healthcare in Puyallup. And also was a therapist at Multicare Behavioral Health and started doing caregiver support groups for caregivers who were supporting people in the elder stages of their life.
Yeah. I see. Well, the last one here, certified compassion fatigue professional. And this one really caught my attention because I think it's sister malady, if you will, is crisis fatigue. And I think we all feel that the last 4 years of this overwhelming kind of weight of what's going on today? What's the disaster today? Yeah. So I think if people have never heard of that, compassion fatigue, I think that would be a similar, you know, a long-term, slow to set in and very real thing.
Yeah. So anyone that's working with, you know, trauma or honestly in our everyday lives, you know, with supporting individuals who are elders or, like you said, watching the news and television and everything that's happening on in the world right now. And with COVID, there's kind of this burnout that is happening. And, you know, compassion fatigue is just what happens when that burnout gets a lot. And those feelings of, I can't do this and it's hard and I'm getting irritated and I'm frustrated and I don't know how to kind of get my way through right now. And so we go through those cycles of compassion fatigue, especially when we're, you know, trying to support somebody in our life that.
Absolutely. You know, I would imagine that the number of elder abuse cases is rising, not only because the pandemic kind of isolates them and nobody's really checking in on them like they used to, but also just so many people are living longer that, you know, 50 years ago or so, you didn't have as many people that needed elder care because something else got them.
Yeah. The age that people are living to is requiring that there is more care and support from them, from their family, from different systems like nursing homes or assisted livings, and also, you know, from people like us, you know.
Sure. So probably everyone, young adult to middle age, probably knows or has seen someone go through the demise of aging. You know, they kind of lose their mobility and their strength and diminished mental capacity. And that's kind of hard.
Yeah, that's really difficult to see somebody that you care about and have such a relationship with go through and lose that independence that they once had. And then also watch you kind of have a different role. Like going from being, you know, the person taken care of as a child then into the role of being the caretaker for the person who is taking care of you. Like that's a different dynamic altogether.
I'm sure it is. And I also, you probably run into as the child caring for the parent, is the parent like, look, I swaddled you in diapers. You can't tell me what to do or, you know, tell me when to go to bed or take my pills. And that's got to be a struggle.
Yeah, it's for sure a struggle. I can talk about it in the sense of, my mom and grandma went through this, and as many, you know, parent-child relationships go through. And for the last five years of my grandmother's life, my mom was her primary caretaker. And what kind of happened is, you know, they had a great, amazing relationship when it started, and watching my grandma, like, not wanting to get support from outside, you know, individuals, either than my mom, or go into a facility to get additional support really put a lot of stress and strain on my mom to then have to be able, like, a primary caregiver for my grandma. And their relationship, as strong as it was, like, it got rocky, you know? And, you know, as much as me and my mom tried to process and talk about those things, it's hard. And you watch my mom get more irritated and get more frustrated and really try to reel it in because she loved her mom so much. But it just gets to a point where it's like you need some additional help and you also just need somebody to talk to you about it.
Sure.
Need somebody to process like what those feelings are because they're normal. And I don't think people know they're normal.
And I also think there's, you know, a lot of pressure to not complain.
Yeah,
I'm taking care of my mother. What can I complain about? You know, yeah. It's so inappropriate, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a hard job. I guarantee you, your mother complained about you when you were a kid.
Okay. That's true. My mom sure complained about me. That's for sure.
So, but this society doesn't really expect that.
Yeah, it does. The society doesn't allow us to have the feelings that we have. It doesn't allow us to talk about, you know, how tired we are when we've been, you know, looking after this person for X amount of hours and we're still working full-time jobs,
mm-hmm.
or doesn't allow us to open up about watching somebody that we care about, like, go through a loss, a physical loss, a cognitive loss, you know, mental health changing. We just aren't a society that really prepares people, I think, to care for elders.
I think it's a very good point.
Yeah.
And I think one of the hardest decisions is when.
Yeah.
Like, when do you take the car away? When do they move in with mm-hmm. you? When do they get to seek care?
Mm-hmm.
And having that initial conversation is probably, you know, from personal experience.
Yeah.
I've got, my siblings are 10 years and older mm-hmm. than me. So they kind of had to deal with that.
Yeah.
They were, and I didn't live close, so thank goodness. Because it was tough. You know,
yeah.
And mom was in a little fender bender and she swore up and down that wasn't her fault. And, you know, you talk to the cops and you talk to the other people and mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, it was her fault, but time for you not to drive. And our society isn't set up for people not driving in many places.
Oh yeah.
You know, where she, exactly
yeah.
where she lived, there was no public transportation. There wasn't even really that I knew of any, delivery services. Like, you know, this is in the '90s. And there wasn't any like Uber Eats or anything to bring you groceries. It was just stuck in your house.
Well,
really tough.
Yeah, we also don't talk about just the privilege to be able to have the finances to support someone that way. And so we have a lot of people in society that are doing it because of necessity because there's no ability to get an individual who needs additional care into programs
mm-hmm.
and or homes or assisted livings or things like that because financially it's difficult.
Oh my goodness, yes. And I think for the lucky ones that, mm-hmm. that do have a third party to
yeah.
kind of do some of the heavy lifting, they have the privilege of kind of being back as the child or the spouse
mm-hmm.
because they're not the caretaker. They can come in and you're still mom and we can talk about silly stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have to tell you, mom, you got to, you know, have that looked at or take your pill or have to give you a bath. That's, you know, that's such an intimate thing that you don't do to your parents.
Yeah. It's not a role or a job that we, you know the skills how to do. First
Boy,
of
that's,
all.
That's so true.
Right. And then it's also like what you're saying is we are so used to being the parent or the partner
mm-hmm.
of the individual, and we don't get the space to do that anymore because we're the caretaker.
Yeah.
And so when your primary role is caretaker and then your backup role is being the child or the partner, it gets difficult. And
yes.
The identity for yourself is lost mm-hmm. sometimes, and the elder's identity is lost because they're not caring for or supporting their family like they used to anymore. And so there's really an identity shift that happens people really struggle with. And so when there is additional support that you're able to have time for yourself or have additional caretaking support, which again is privilege, you're able to play the role that you know
yeah.
in that relationship.
And I think it'd be especially acute if that person that is taking care of their parent is also taking care of their own kids.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
that's just, where do I get a respite from this? I
yeah.
mean, if I'm at home and I'm here and I'm at work and there's no breathing room.
It's a lot. Caretakers take on so much responsibility for the generations below them, the generations above them. And we don't we just are never taught how to do that.
Yeah.
At least in our society and in our culture, right? In other cultures, you know, there is, you know, everyone lives together and everyone supports each other and kids are helping, parents are helping grandparents. But in kind of our society and culture, it doesn't.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Nuclear family, small numbers. That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been talking about elder care, where that's kind of towards the end of life, and maybe a spouse or a child is now caring for their parent, whatever. And this can be very fatiguing. It's long term, like you don't know when it's going to end, and that can lead to a lot of fatigue, a lot of frustration. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be abusive.
So just because, like, my mom and grandmother, for example, like, just because my mom was stressed and irritated and, you know, lacking sleep and, like, really struggling to what she thought be, like, the best daughter for my grandmother in supporting her and, you know, was getting irritated and those things, doesn't necessarily mean that that's abusive, right? That's normal signs and symptoms of somebody who's taking on a lot and is trying to support somebody through a later stage of life. So
not only should we look for signs of elder abuse, we should look for signs of caretaker fatigue.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one place in our society that we completely miss, right? Is we just assume that, like, this is your role and this is your job as a spouse or a child to support someone. And we don't think about how that toll is taking on somebody who's caretaking.
Sure.
We just assume this is the role you're taking and this is what you're doing and go for it.
And I think we see that during the pandemic, like, oh, you're a nurse. Yeah. You're supposed to be able to handle 24/7, you know, people dying around you. And that's not true.
Yeah. Frontline workers right now are going through some pretty intense compassion fatigue from the work that they're doing and supporting the people in the hospitals or, you know, in the clinics or wherever.
Nurses generally have a high burnout job because, you know, they're getting it from the physicians and they're getting it from the patients and...
Yeah, now they got a pandemic on their
hands. Yeah, so. And they got, you know, some people saying, ah, it's not a big deal. Like, no, it's a big deal.
Come on down
and watch.
Yeah, when you work with people, like, mentally or physically in supporting them through something that's stressful, it's hard. And it definitely takes a toll on you and you go through burnout and then you feel that compassion fatigue and you're working through it and you're trying to be the best that you can, but that doesn't mean that you're going to have, like, residual feelings of irritation and things like that. And that's what happens with people who are caretaking as well. And it's a normal thing. And it feels like a huge weight on you. And there's really not a lot of people around you that are asking how that's going.
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure. So what should we look for signs of elder abuse?
Yeah, so identifying elder abuse, there's, you know, many things that you can look for. So first off, they really just stop taking part in those general activities that they used to enjoy. And they might also maybe not be as kept up, right? So looking messy, like unwashed hair, dirty clothes. Sometimes there may be, like, an unexplained weight loss that's going on. They might become withdrawn or act in, like, an agitated or kind of violent way, which may be coming from the abuse that's coming from the individual. They may display some signs of trauma, some unexplained bruises, burns or cuts or things that physically we might be seeing, you know, which is something that friends and family can be looking for. Other things like glasses being broken, physical signs of any kind of restraints or holding down, really. That's not the things that we want to think about, but sometimes in, like, care facilities or with individuals that come into the home, you know, we may see more of those patterns happening. Bed sores, like lack of medical aid devices. So when somebody doesn't have glasses or a walker or dentures or hearing aids or any of those, like, medications that they need to be able to have, you know, a fruitful life.
Sure.
There's some kind of neglect happening there, right? Possibly. And it could be a financial thing, and that's something to look into because then you can give support services for those things. But it also could just be neglect or abandonment on that part. Any kind of eviction notice, unpaid rent, like if the mortgage is late or home evictions, any kind of unpaid bills, like financial abuse is actually one of those ones that is on the rise. And especially with COVID happening, more and more people are struggling for finances. And if an elder has a Social Security check coming in or we've we found that there's an additional mortgage taken out on the house that it then goes to the caretaker.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. The things like that where I don't think we think about financial abuse in that way, but as somebody maybe is losing like their cognitive abilities, people could be taking advantage of that and utilizing their funds to be able to support themselves.
Well, boy, you know, a couple of things come to mind. One is when you talk about looking at the person to see if they're unkempt or any unexpected bruising or things like that. Sometimes I bet that's hard to do because you usually ask the caregiver, well, how is so-and-so?
Yeah.
Oh, you really shouldn't see her right now. She's in, you know, she's in a mood or she's sleeping or she doesn't feel like visitors.
Yeah.
And they kind of hide them because they know what they're doing is wrong.
Absolutely.
So that maybe on our part, that's something that they kind of press and say, well, okay, can I just peek in? Or I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but it just seems like just taking that answer every time is probably a flag in itself.
Yeah.
They can't be seen.
It's a flag when you had a relationship with someone that you talked with or saw often and all of a sudden you're not seeing them again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no kind of interaction that you're having. And again, like with a good caretaker and a good, you know, parent or child who's supporting, like it could be that there's like physical or cognitive decline that's happening and they're just like really trying to support in that moment. But if somebody with abusive behaviors towards an elder, like there's some hiding of what's going on, and it can be pretty evident sometimes.
Well, the other thing that came to mind was financial abuse.
Yeah.
My mother was an attorney. She was one of the first 300 attorneys in the history of Tennessee. She's just
impressive.
Oh, she was so impressive. Very good at cross examination when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I could not get away with anything. Yes. Anyway, so she was always sharp. She just, that was her. And, you know, we all moved out of the house, went on our careers and moved away. And she got somebody into the house to help her. You know, just cook a meal, this, that, the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then my sister's the one that really kind of caught on to this because she lived close enough that she could visit every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And things just didn't seem right. And then she looked at her finances and that woman stole $50,000 from her.
Yeah.
Just, oh, you didn't pay me today. Oh, I thought I paid you yesterday. No. Mm. Things like that. And oh, we all felt terrible. Like, how could we let this happen?
Yeah.
But it was, you were so used to mom managing her own finances and you know, have the mental capacity to see any kind of fraud.
Mm.
But it happened.
Yeah. And it is, financial abuse is very, very common, you know, because of the cognitive decline and the relying on that individual to be taking care of them physically and mentally and things like that. And so it becomes very easy to have, you know, coercive control over that individual who's like relying on you as a caretaker.
Yeah.
And as, you know, as a, that has to feel terrible as like a, you know, a partner or as a child to watch that happen. But it happens. And like, that's elder abuse.
It is. And it doesn't even have to be a physical person inside the home doing it. It can be an internet scam, a phone scam, that kind of thing. That just that's they prey on the elderly.
Yeah, and there are now I can't remember the name, but there are now places that you can report all these scams, and they'll check into them, and they can help support people trying to get like legal to go after individuals who have scammed. But yeah, the online scams and the telephone scams for elders are, it's just so unfortunate that people are using their power and control, like as we see again with domestic violence and sexual assault, using that power and control over that person to be able to take advantage of them.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, just like with domestic violence and sexual assault, a lot of times the picture that we see is physical, right? We think it's like bruising and hitting and things like that. But a lot of times it's just abandonment, neglect, and financial abuse is what we're seeing.
If you can't leave me, you'll be in poverty.
Yeah.
If you do, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I had a situation where a friend, similar situation, her mother was kind of getting on in years and she lived in another state and she was worried and she became, what's the term, where you take over the finances.
Power of attorney
for finance. It wasn't wasn't her whole life.
Yeah.
But it was, and so that just let her keep an eye on, like, what is this thing going out you know, 500 bucks every month.
Yeah.
Maybe it's legitimate, maybe it isn't. But if she didn't have that, she just was hope that nothing bad has happened.
Absolutely. And, you know, power attorneys are great. And also sometimes power attorneys are the ones that are taking the finances.
Oh.
So it's important.
Of course.
Yeah, it's important to think about that, you know. I think sometimes we think about as like caregivers, the people who are supporting people in like a nursing home or an assisted living or somebody who's coming into the home who's like a CNA or an aide. And then we also have like the family themselves who are, you know, doing the financial abuse.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who are taking out the
sure, the second mortgage.
Yeah. The second mortgage or using, you know, an extra $500 a month from the Social Security check. And so it's a broad spectrum of people who have, you know, the trust of the individual that they're caring for.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, and unfortunately, it can be the direct family members that are doing that.
If you suspected someone of that,
mm-hmm.
let's say I was an outside third party, not related to the person I suspect mm-hmm. of being financially abused, who would I approach and say, I think this is going on, but I don't know. I mean, is it police or?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to a number of people. I will call Adult Protective Services just because they can kind of guide you in the questions to ask, like who else could support you in that particular community. I think people are always scared, like, of calling CPS and Adult Protective Services and maybe even the police to get involved. But you can also just call and just ask questions to them. Like, they've helped me.
Okay.
They've helped me to kind of very particular situations, like, walk through what I would do or say. If the individual has, you know, children or a partner or whatever, you might be able to, you know, gently address it with them. Be like, hey, I'm seeing this, this, and this. Like, I'm really confused. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, do you know what's going on? How do I check? Like, how would
you? Hey, you get a brand new car. It's every 6 months for less.
Yeah. So, but there are definitely, like, different services. There's like the King County like caregiver support groups, and they can walk you through how to kind of addressing those things as well with an individual. But I think what it really comes down to is like being aware, being supportive, and being like a good neighbor
mm-hmm.
to that person. Like if they're your neighbor or if they're, you know, your family, and because cognitively that person may not be able to respond to that.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, so. That makes sense. And we talked about physical abuse, signs of that, but we also have sexual abuse, emotional abandonment issues.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are on a, can happen, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, the different types of abuse are for elder abuse is, you know, physical, sexual, emotional, neglect, abandonment, and financial. And, you know, it ends up being about 1 out of 10 individuals
wow.
who are elders in the United States are going through some type of elder
That's
abuse.
A huge number. You know,
the vulnerability also is something to consider, too. So some people may have different cognitive concerns. And so if you're looking at the degree of a vulnerable adult or what the state considers to be a vulnerable adult,
mm-hmm.
or protect a vulnerable adult, you have to look at all the factors. Like you have to look at age, you have to look at their cognitive abilities, their physical abilities, right? Somebody who is, you know, wheelchair bound may have more of the chance of elder abuse occurring because of protecting themselves, right? And cognitively as well.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any particular group that is more prone to this? Like, is it gender based? Is it we know it's age based. But maybe race or whatever?
Yeah. Similar to domestic violence and sexual assault, it does not discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't discriminate on race, religion, military status, any, you know, sexual orientation. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Economic status.
No, it doesn't discriminate because it comes down to, you know, a vulnerable individual and power and control over that individual, which is like similar to what we've talked about before about domestic violence and sexual assault.
Okay, so what can we do to kind of decrease this scourge?
Yeah, so I really look at, like, how can Vashon really support their neighbors, you know, the individuals in their family who are elders and really make sure that everyone is safe, right? Like what we do at Dove is make sure people are safe. And that's what we want our elders to do, is to be safe on this island. And so we really look at it from a community advocacy perspective. So really watching out for your neighbor and your friends. So being able to talk about caregiver burnout, being able to refer individuals to places that can support them, like the Dove Project or the Senior Center or any of those places on the island that work with elders specifically. Making sure that we just have numerous and really strong relationships with people in our community.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big piece of a lot of things that we're seeing, especially with COVID, is that people are becoming more and more isolated.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really difficult to know what's going on when somebody becomes so isolated, right? And so, you know, like people at the, who are doing deliveries at the food bank, you know, who are going to, you know, elders' homes or checking in. Like, that's amazing.
It
right?
is.
It's like any of those different programs, like the Senior Center or the food bank or anyone who's able to, a neighbor, right, your next-door neighbor, be, go in and just check in on how you doing today. Like, put a note in their mailbox and, you know, write back and put a note in my mailbox, right? So any of those kind of, like, connected things that we can do, the more we're connected and the more strong relationships we have of each of our elders in the community, the more, like, we're going to be able to catch things that are happening.
Yeah, well, first of all, putting something in their mailbox is a federal crime, so, so let's don't do that.
We'll take that out. Damn it.
No, that's fine. But I absolutely...
That's so funny. I just put something in my neighbor's mailbox the other day. I was like, here's a little gift. Whoopsie.
You can put it on top of the mailbox.
Okay. Do you want me to start over?
No. I think it's hilarious. No, but seriously, I think that's a great idea because even just leaving a little note on the door.
Or, yeah, on the door instead of, you know, the mailbox.
Or outside the mailbox.
Or outside the mailbox.
Like
on
an
the deck.
Honest person.
Oh, man. Yeah, just those little acts of kindness that we, and the little acts of connectedness, right? Like, that's the big point. Is like, this island is so amazing about staying connected. We just, in these times, and for people who are more isolated, we have to be more connected. We have to think about it more. You're more intentional with it.
Well, you know, I live in a little cul-de-sac and all the neighbors are elderly, all very sweet people. But what I do is, like, I put their paper on the porch or I take in their garbage cans and I watch.
Yeah.
Like, if that paper is still there 3 days later, I might go, hey, what's going on?
Exactly. That's
And then, so it's a non-interactive. It's not like, you tell me how you're doing today. And, you know, people might not like that, but it's just subtle watching.
Yeah.
Neighbor.
Yeah.
And they're lovely people, so I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, it's a subtle support system, right?
Yeah.
That you're creating by doing these little things that just is like, hey, what's going on? How are you doing? What, you know, what's happening?
Yeah.
You don't even have to say it. You just have to do something and just check in, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Other things are just like listening to older adults and their caregivers to really understand their challenges and provide support. And that gets back to understanding that stresses are there, and this isn't necessarily for somebody who is having abusive behaviors toward an elder, but just like checking on those people who are having compassion fatigue, to make sure like how they're doing, and that just creates a stronger community, right? You know, educating yourself about how to recognize, you know, elder abuse, like do some Googling,
yeah,
right, or you know, listen to a TED Talk or a podcast or
this show,
and like. Try to see what you're seeing and see if it's something that you should, you know, perk up your ears or your eyes and watch about.
Now, is there any place that, I know we can go to Dove, but is there other places, like you mentioned, the Senior Center?
Yeah.
And are all those, I guess, can be found on the web of addresses and phone numbers and things like that?
Yeah, so... if you were going to be like reporting elder abuse because you were really concerned that somebody was going through that, that number is 1-866-END-HARM. So it's pretty easy to remember, but you can find that on the DSHS website. And again, like I said before, they really just walk you through that process.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a scary process at all. And you can call if you're just like, I'm not sure if this is or not, right?
And how much better is it to not be sure and then find out you're wrong.
Exactly.
Then not do anything and find out you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So. There's also, like, King County has a really good caregiver support group that you can look up on the King County website that I would highly suggest. Like I said, the Vashon Senior Center is amazing. The people over there are amazing at what they're doing to support the elders on this island. Like, big round of applause for them, especially during COVID. We have the Community Care Center, is great. Like, the people down there are amazing, and they have a support group as well. It used to be, I think, like at 7 on Thursdays. I'm not sure with COVID if it's still going on, but I'm sure you could give them a call.
Mm-hmm.
And they, actually working in a facility, know a lot about, you know, these situations and work with these situations a lot. There's also Vashon Elder Care. They're great because they are what provide respite to a lot of families on the island who have elder support. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's us. You can always call us. You know, we specialize in any types of abuse that are occurring. So I think people on the island think of us as domestic violence and sexual assault and extreme cases. But realistically, like, we work with any kind of spectrum of abuse or relationship issues.
Well, you know, I've mentioned this on other Dove Speak shows that the Dove Project is kind of the Swiss Army knife of where to go for help.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're not going to fix everything, but they know who can fix or help you out. And that's just as important as kind of, you know, ombudsman that just gets you where you need to go.
Yeah. We really think about ourselves as like a resource hub, right? Like,
That's very good. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, we're not mental health therapists. Like, we're going to help you go to VUIFS or, you know, find a mental health therapist. And, you know, we're not like the senior center. You know, we're not doing those type of programming. But we're going to figure out and use like our knowledge and our skills and our resources to figure out what you need in your particular situation on a whole spectrum of different situations. And we're just there to be, you know, listen and support and validate and not drive any one direction, but just give you what you need to make your own decisions. And
you're not there to find a bad guy. You're just to help everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. It's on the individual who's coming in to figure out what they want to do with their situation going forward. And we just give, here are the tools and the resources, and, you know, you move forward in what is most empowering for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, kind of out of time here. And is anything you'd like to say to kind of wrap it up?
Not specifically. Just, this was lovely. I'm so glad you had me on.
Oh, absolutely. This is... fun's not the right word, but it was very informative about a very tough subject to talk about.
Yeah, it is a difficult subject. And I think that's kind of what we do the best is really talking about difficult subjects and bringing it down to a baseline knowledge level so people can understand that people are just struggling with this. If it's, you know, seeing actual elder abuse occurring, or if it's just a caregiver who's really struggling with something in regards to compassion fatigue and needing to find a support group, like, we are here to really talk about it. I know we have another show coming up, though.
We did. Let me look at my notes here. This show was going to air August 25th and the following week. And the new show that we want people to think about, in case this is something that they're interested in, is Teen
Healthy Relationships.
Teen Healthy Relationships, that's it.
Yeah, which it's going to be with Maya Battisti, who is amazing. She is our Dove Teen Advocate, and she works within the schools and just does amazing work. And so I'm really excited for her to come on and talk about what does a healthy relationship look like in regards to teens, and how do you talk to your teen about having a healthy relationship?
Another awkward situation.
Yeah. Another hard conversation to have.
Yeah.
It's what we do, have hard conversations.
So if you do have a question about that and you want it addressed on the next show, you can email vov@vashondoveproject.org. And just, you know, no names or anything. You just like, and if you've got that question, somebody else does. So don't be shy. Just, and you know, again, no names when we talk about it on the show, unless you want us to mention your name.
Yeah. Everything is confidential with us. Sure.
Absolutely. So please do that. Otherwise, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
This was great.
Yeah, this is so great.